If you're a fan of the Resilient Recruiter podcast, I've got exciting news. I'm hosting a special event for recruitment business owners in London on September 17th and 18th, and I'd love you to join us. If you want to achieve your full potential, you need to surround yourself with the right people. At the Recruitment Coach Live Summit, you'll get to meet some of my podcast guests in person, hang out with us, and share ideas. Some of the folks I've interviewed on the show will either be attending or speaking at the summit. Early bird pricing is still available. Register now by visiting recruitmentcoach.com/summit.
We switched our business from fully contingent to, I'd say, 80% retained. And that's simply because of branding. That's literally what it is. It's branding and trust.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby, and today we're joined by Justice Peterson.
I'll be honest, I really struggled in my first 6 months, Mark. I was making the calls. I knew that the activity had to be there for my time door knocking. There were many times where I thought to myself, like, this is definitely not the career for me. And I went from making no deals in my first 6 months to becoming the top biller in Canada in year two.
Justice is an award-winning recruiter and the CEO of the Peterson Group of Companies in Winnipeg, which he has grown from $500K to $1.8 million in annual revenues. His group of companies includes recruitment, media, and real estate. On the recruitment side, they specialize in construction and engineering.
When I first hired Cass, in our first year, we did about, I think it was about $500,000. And in our second year after hiring Cass, we did closer to $1 million. Just simple numbers there, like we almost doubled our billings. And don't get me wrong, it wasn't all coming from like LinkedIn, but it was the fact that we were top of mind. And anytime somebody thought of, hey, we need a construction search done, they thought of us.
I'm super excited to hear how their media business complements their recruiting business and how they've leveraged video as a true differentiator.
When I think of content, Mark, I think of three pillars: graphic design, video, and I think of writing. We started noticing that a lot of people were leaning into our content. It was something different that they hadn't seen before. And I'm talking, when I say people leaning in, I'm talking both clients and candidates. Mm-hmm. So we were able to attract candidates to roles easier, and then clients started reaching out to us. So the amount of inbound business we started to get pretty quickly was actually pretty profound.
Justice sits on two boards, and he's also a member of the Pinnacle Society, which is a collective of the top performing recruiters in North America.
For us, it was simple. It just came to the point where we were just getting so much inbound business that we didn't need to cold call anymore. Like, we typically have anywhere between 20 to 30 searches going on at any given time.
Justice, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Mark. It's a true honor to be here.
So it's quite rare that I get to interview a fellow Canadian on here. So that's a bonus. And we actually met in person at the Pinnacle Society Conference in Atlanta. So that was pretty cool as well, because often when I'm interviewing people on the show, I've never met them face to face. So that was amazing. And your video person was there, and my video person, Sanjay, was there, and they were geeking out over, you know, video stuff. So that was an awesome conference.
Yeah, that was great. It was great to meet you in person, and Sanjay as well. I feel like you just get that deeper connection after you've met, even just for a brief, you know, 10, 15 minute period in person. So it was great to see you guys.
100%. So listen, tell me the story of how you got into recruiting. And also part two of that question is what you think makes a good recruiter.
Yeah, absolutely. So the way that I got into recruiting, I guess I'll kind of rewind my life a little bit 10, 15 years ago. I was in school, in college, I wanted to be a doctor. And so I was doing an undergraduate degree in biochemistry and sciences. And I knew after a few years of going to school that being in sciences wasn't for me. I was more of a people person. But growing up in a small town in Canada, I wasn't really exposed to a lot of, you know, networking and business opportunities. So I didn't really know anything differently. So I was walking through a career fair one day at the university, and a guy that owns a marketing company came up to me and just said, "Hey, how would you like to move to Texas this summer and make $50,000? And that was his pitch. It was a great pitch.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. He had me right away. He signed me up right away. I went up to him and I said, you know, show me what your top salesperson earned last year. And he showed me, and I said, all right, let's give this a shot. So it turned out to be door-to-door sales, selling pest control services in the southern U.S.
I like how he called it a marketing business and it was a pest control sales business. That's amazing.
Yeah, they were marketing services for a large pest control company.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So their version of marketing was door-to-door sales, which is great. So You know, but it was a very challenging job because there's, I still think to this day, there's no harder job than going to somebody's door and trying to get their credit card information right then and there within the first 2 minutes.
Absolutely. Right? So, that's crazy. It's funny. I don't want to interrupt your flow, Justice, but my very first sales job was door to door, but we weren't trying to make a sale. We were booking appointments. So that was in the painting and decorating business. I don't know if you have heard of College Pro Painters. They have them in Winnipeg.
Oh, absolutely. They painted our house.
Yep. There you go. So so I was actually, my first summer job in university was as a painter. But you can make extra money cold calling, door knocking, kind of after you're finished painting for the day and people are having their dinner and home in the evening. You just go like door to door, knocking on doors, trying to book appointments. And then this following summer, I actually started my own painting business. But yeah, I mean, it's a good introduction to cold calling, right? Because you have to have the courage to walk up to someone, interrupt what they're doing, and talk to a complete stranger.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we were door knocking from noon till about 8 or 9 p.m. every day. So, you know, the idea was to hit 100 doors every day. And to be really good at the job, you only had to make 2 sales a day. So, you know, getting rejected by 98 people every day was, that's how you build resiliency. And I think that's obviously what makes a good recruiter, right?
Absolutely.
So I was actually lucky enough where we were in this, my very first day on the job. The guy who ran the company came out and knocked the first door with me on and you know, job shadowing, right? He did a pitch and they said no. And he said, okay, you've seen me pitch, go do your first door. And he walked away and I was lucky enough where I pitched my first door and the lady said, yeah, we've seen spiders and ants all over our house. Let's do this right away. And so I got extremely lucky and made my very first sale, my very first door. And I think that's kind of what helped me get the courage and, you know, get rid of that butterfly feeling. So the rest of the doors were, you know, not as difficult. That's for sure. It's always easier to make sales once you've done the first one, right?
100%.
So anyway, I did door knocking for, I guess, 3 summers. And when I moved to Winnipeg, it was for my wife. She lived here. And so she wanted to come back to Winnipeg. And I saw a job posting online for a recruitment consultant. And to be honest, at the time, I had no idea what a recruitment consultant was, but it was with a company called Hayes, and
British company.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was really attracted to the fact that it was a low base, high commission type of role, because obviously when I was door knocking, it was just 100% commission, and I knew commission jobs had high upside. So I interviewed for that position. I got offered the job the next day. And I remember this was back in 2013. And it was a 25K base salary with a commission structure. So at the time, you know, it was basically just, you know, beer and gas money. Like I couldn't even really pay my rent with it. But I knew once they showed me the commission structure, what I could do. So amazing. I started with Hayes and they started me out in life sciences recruitment. Now, I did that because I had a biochemistry background and they felt like there was a market for med tech, health tech, not recruiting doctors, but more so the technology behind the healthcare, right? And I'll be honest, I really struggled in my first 6 months, Mark. I was making the calls. I knew that the activity had to be there for my time door knocking, but I just couldn't really get any traction in the market. And 4 or 5 months had gone by. I hadn't made a single placement or deal yet. And there were many times where I thought to myself, like, this is definitely not the career for me. I just can't get a sale. And so one day I was driving home from work and in Winnipeg, we have 2 seasons here, winter and construction season. And it's kind of the big joke of the city. But I was driving home one day and I saw, you know, the road was under construction. There was a big tower crane in the background building a multifamily apartment. There were schools being renovated. And I thought to myself, like, who is doing all this construction recruitment here? There's so much of it going on. And so as soon as I got home, I pulled in the driveway, I went home and I Googled like construction recruitment in Winnipeg. And the only thing that popped up was one company who was more of a generalist company just saying they covered construction, but there was no actual specialism. So the next day I went into the office and I just asked my manager, I said, hey, like, there's no one doing construction. Why don't we give this a shot? I feel like I might be able to connect with these people better. And sure enough, my first week cold calling these companies, the first call I made, yeah, we need a superintendent. the next call I made, yeah, we need a project manager. And we just hit the ground running. And so 5 months of no deals from the healthcare industry to making multiple deals right away in construction. And I went from making no deals in my first 6 months to becoming the top biller in Canada in year two. So, you know, finding that market was imperative to the success that I had. That's for sure. So that's how I got into recruitment.
Great story. And it's funny because it sounds like construction was ants and spiders all over again. You found, you know, where there was a need, right? So it's interesting because I, from what I understand, Hayes actually majors in construction, don't they? In other parts of the world, they do anyway. I know we have a client, Jenny Diaz. She and her colleagues are going to be on the podcast shortly. We've already recorded it. And they worked for Hayes down in the States. And that was construction recruitment. So, but not in Canada?
Yeah. Hayes was they had industry specific desks and offices, okay. Right? So they were kind of generalists that covered everything.
Okay.
But they did allow construction to be one of their specialisms in my early days starting there,
right.
Which was back in about 13, 14. Yeah.
So tell me what you think makes a good recruiter and what. Now, obviously, being in the right market and choosing your niche is a huge decision that has an impact on how successful you can be, right? If you take the world's best recruiter and put them in a market that's like contracting, then that person's not going to perform as well as an average recruiter who's in a hot market, right? We've all seen, like when I started recruiting, it was the late 90s. And I wasn't working this desk, but I could see IT recruiters who were, they weren't the top recruiters and they were smashing it, right? Just because the market was so hot. But that's not enough. Like, what are the other qualities, attributes that you think made the critical difference for you?
Yeah. And, you know, I've gone through ups and downs in the construction market over the years. Like, I've been doing this for over 10 years now, right? So we've seen some ups and downs. And I would just say, you know, maintaining activity for sure, but also like giving it time and like fighting through the adversity is so important. We see so many recruiters that, you know, they'll bill well for a year, then they go 3 months with nothing and they just quit and they say this career is not for them and they don't fight through that adversity. So I think, you know, you got to give it time and you got to continue to put in that effort and provide value to the industry. I think one of the major reasons people quit is they look ahead and see how far left they have to go instead of looking back and see how far they've gotten.
Great. Absolutely. I love that. It's totally true. And this industry does have a high, you know, attrition rate of rookies turning into career billers, right? And I think that's the reason is this job is the best job in the world and it's also the worst job in the world at the same time. And when things are going great, of course, it's easy to stay motivated and, you know, to work hard. But the true test is when things are not going great, when you're in a slump or the market's tough, you know, do you persist and keep going? And if you can't, you know, go through that, then it's definitely not the career for you. Anything you want to add to that, Justice, or should we move on?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, when you look at recruiters that have been recruiting for 10 or 20 years, they're probably some of the most resilient people that you'll meet. And I know that's one thing I figured out quickly when I went to the Pinnacle Society conferences. All these people that have been career recruiters have fought through more adversity in their lives than any other people I've ever met.
Great. Absolutely. That's a good description. So I'll tell you the thing that I am the most excited to learn from you today, Justice, is your media side of the business and how that complements your recruiting business. So can you tell me the story of going from sort of mainly cold calling to mainly digital marketing?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess what I would do is I would kind of rewind it and start at the macro level. From when I was with Hayes and even when I first started my own business is as a recruiter, we typically do cold calling and it's one-to-one, right? So I'll pick up the phone, I'll call Mark. He says he's interested in business or not. And we hang up, we do it again. And typically, you know, when we're working with clients, we have somewhere in the range of 50 to 100 clients that we, you know, it's a small circle. And we continuously call them for repeat business over the years. So what we did is we said, okay, so how are we going to become subject matter experts in our industry? And once we've demonstrated that, how do we get to scale that, right? So we started posting content online. And instead of going from one to one cold calling, it's one to many, one to 1,000, one to 10,000, one to 20,000 plus people. So what you're doing is you're actually just demonstrating what your subject matter expertise is. Instead of on the phone to people that already know you, you're doing it online to a larger population of people that do not know you, right? So we were at an interesting point in our business when we made this transition, because we were, you know, as many recruiters face a time in their lives where they're just sick of cold calling. They're hearing a lot of no's all the time. And, you know, it's easy to burn out that way. So I actually had this kind of like this epiphany or this hallucination one day when I was at the gym. I was on the Stairmaster. That's kind of my, like, where I do a lot of my thinking is I thought to myself, like, how do we scale this business? How do we make it to a point where we're not just making phone calls, but we're actually talking to people online? And so we decided to take the plunge and hire a social media and content manager, Cass, who you met when we were in Atlanta. The funny thing about hiring our first employee, Cass, to help with this is I actually thought, Mark, that I'll hire her and I'm going to go from working 60 hours a week to, you know, working 40 hours a week. I'll work less and she'll take over everything. The Canva, the Adobe, the video, the graphic design, all that. She'll just, you know, hit the ground running. But as you know, when you hire an employee, you have to give them time. You have to give them that investment, right? And so what I actually found is I probably ended up working more hours. So I went from working 60 hours a week to probably the same 60 or 70 hours a week, still doing my recruitment, but also generating content with her. Now, when I talk about generating content online for scalability, though, I'm not just talking about video. I think there's many different forms of content that actually resonate with different audiences differently. So we do a lot of short form and long form written content. We post stills of each other where we will actually write copy and then post a picture of ourselves. So it's like people are scrolling on their phone. Then they see a picture of me and some written stuff and they'll stop. So they'll scroll, 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 stop. So we call that a scroll stop. There's also a video that we do for our clients, right? So when we do a search, you know, one of the nice things about construction for us anyways, and the advantage we have is that people like seeing time lapses and buildings being built. You know, we have a bit of a visual advantage that way. So we go to sites, we go to site tours, we go to a lot of industry events, and we take video of that and we post it online. Now, it's interesting because once we started doing this stuff and posting it on LinkedIn, and we'll just keep it LinkedIn for today because, to be honest, that's kind of really all we use. But we started noticing that a lot of people were leaning into our content. It was something different that they hadn't seen before. And I'm talking, when I say people leaning in, I'm talking both clients and candidates. Mm-hmm. So we were able to attract candidates to roles easier. And then clients started reaching out to us. So the amount of inbound business we started to get pretty quickly was actually pretty profound.
Amazing. So let me just break this down a little bit, Justin. So first of all, when was this?
So we started our business in 2021 and we brought Cass onto the team in 2022.
So it was pretty quickly you decided like, hey, this is the direction. It's going to be one to many. It's going to be digital marketing and content. And was Cass, and it was you and your wife initially?
Yeah. So it was me and my wife when we started the business.
Okay.
We did that together for about a full year, actually, before we brought Cass on board.
And was Cass your first employee?
Cass was our first employee.
Okay. This is super interesting because that is unheard of. To make a marketing person your first employee, right? And I've heard of, I've had people on here, maybe it was who are really forward thinking marketing and they, maybe it was their third or fourth or fifth hire or their 10th hire, right? But I've never heard of anyone who that was their first hire was content and social media. So that's, what gave you the confidence to, because that's a pretty big bet that you placed on, digital marketing, you know, what was going through your head when you made that decision?
Yeah, that's a good question. And, you know, when I brought it up to my wife and I said, listen, I have this kind of crazy idea, but I think it's going to work. She looked at me a little like kind of cross-eyed at first. She's like, why wouldn't we just add a 360 recruiter who can cold call and generate clients that way. Like, that's how recruitment companies work. She was from the industry as well, so she understood that part. Yeah. And I said to her, well, you know, if we hire another 360 recruiter, we have to train them or untrain them in their ways and train the way we like to do things. But what if we start putting content out online to drive inbound leads? Then it's kind of creating a sales funnel, right? It's also making people who would otherwise be cold into more warmer calls.
Yes.
We were also at a point too where a large real estate company locally here had sent out an RFP, like a request for proposal for recruitment services to five companies in the city. And they had saw that last year we opened up in construction and real estate. So they included us in the proposal. They narrowed it down to three for interviews and selected us as one of the three. Now, I knew the other two companies that were interviewing to get those searches. What it was is it was a 10 to 15 internal engineers that they wanted to hire, design and structural engineers for their team. So it was a big, big contract, like mid six figures. And I knew that the other two companies were going to have more resources than us, more employees, more recruiters, and they just would be able to have more touch points than us. You know, when there's 15 engineers they need to hire and the amount of phone calls I had to make, interviews I had to do, like to reverse engineer that, like mathematically, I just didn't, I don't think I was going to be able to do it. So we pitched them, hey, we will hire a content manager. We will tell stories and we will scale this online so that other people are going to hear about your story. But also more importantly, you know, what we also said in that interview is the first hire you need to make is that the top person, the VP, because when you hire a really, really good senior manager, other people and other engineers from other companies are going to want to follow you. So we started the digital transition because of that. That company actually ended up selecting us for that search. And it was a great way to kind of just like, a catalyst to get our company moving in terms of finances. So it helped with the ability to also hire social media manager as well. But it just kind of, I think, doubled down on the fact that we wanted to do that. We wanted to create content. We wanted to drive inbound leads. And it just turned out to be a really good idea. But you're right, Mark, like it was a big risk at first. And I think it was very different than the way other recruitment companies are operating. Mm-hmm. But that's what kind of made it attractive to us is we wanted to do things differently. And also yes. We wanted to have fun with it. One of the benefits to having Cass and the marketing department in our team is it makes things fun. When we're developing content, we're thinking about our searches differently. We're thinking about our clients in a different way. And I think that kind of brings the fun back into recruitment.
Awesome. I love this. There's a lot to unpack here, Justice. So a few things that are brilliant. One, going back to that pitch to the real estate company, what's awesome is you analyzed the competition and you saw, well, what are their strengths? How do we compare? Like, what do they have that we don't? And how can we mitigate their, you know, our weaknesses and bring something to the table that nobody else is bringing, right, in order to win that business? So that was smart. And then that also helped fund the hiring of Cass, which then was going to benefit that client, but also your business as well. But what's, I think the key to why you won that business is because you talked about telling their story, right? And so they were kind of getting two for one. They were getting recruiting services, but they were also getting marketing. And that was going to help, not just going to help them recruit for those engineers, but it was actually going to help their whole, you know, the whole construction project and the whole venture, right? So they were getting a lot of extra value there. And ultimately, I believe in selling on value, not on price. So, if you're going head to head with another recruiter and you do more or less the same thing to them, right, then the client is going to go, well, they look the same to me. Let's go with the cheapest, right? Whereas what you're offering is so different, you can't really even compare. It's like apples and oranges. Justin, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's definitely what like a main thing in our value proposition, Mark. And one of the main reasons we win a lot of searches and get a lot of inbound leads is because we, as far as I know, are the only company in Canada in recruitment that actually has a media department inside their own four walls.
Right.
Sure, you could hire an external marketing agency, but you know, you also have to factor that into your price in the search. And it's probably not cost efficient. So I think that we're the only company doing that. And it brings a lot of value to the client because not only are they getting a search, but they're also usually getting a video that's kind of like propping their company up. What we call it is like a hype video for each client.
I love that.
Now, some of the searches we do, like we can't always do a video with it because we turn the search around so quickly. And as you know, video, it takes time.
Yeah.
It's time consuming and it's expensive. But, you know, when done properly, the clients that have used us for those services are definitely winning.
And I guess it would make more sense for those repeat clients, right? Where, because then you do the video and you can recycle that for future hires as well. So just going back to 2022, so you hired Cass. And by the way, you mentioned a point about it actually was more work in the short term. This is what I think people need to realize. If you're serious about growing your company, then, and I mean, when people want to scale, it's because they want to create more freedom, right? But the reality is in the short term, you're going to be working harder. That's just part of the journey. Ultimately, it will mean that you have a team of people around you and, you know, it's not all on you to do everything. And you do have more freedom. But in the early days, you're going to have to work harder. We need to train people. We need to develop people. And also it takes time for people to do well. So you mentioned that you started getting these inbound leads from the content you're posting. Can you quantify that in terms of like, how did that really shift things? Were you still doing cold calls as well? And then like, were you getting enough business from like social media or like, what was the balance there?
Yeah. So I guess to quantify that, Mark, like when I first hired Cass, in our first year, we did about, I think it was about $500,000.
Great.
And in our second year after hiring Cass, we did closer to $1 million. So Just simple numbers there. Like we almost doubled our billings simply because of, and don't get me wrong, it wasn't all coming from like LinkedIn, right? Mm-hmm. But it was the fact that we were top of mind. And anytime somebody thought of, hey, we need a construction search done, they thought of us. You know, some of the signs to me that we're doing things properly, I guess, Mark, would be obviously the business from LinkedIn and the revenue growth. That's obvious. But also, you know, we get accolades all the time. Like we go to industry events and people come up to us every single time and say, I love the content that you guys put out. No one else is doing things like this.
That's awesome.
Every time a client calls us, they say, hey, we're, you know, we see you on LinkedIn. We see you here. They just see us everywhere, right? And then another thing that I thought was actually really interesting is 2 years ago, I got a cease and desist letter from a certain company that we were recruiting out of their firm. It happens in recruitment, right? People like companies get pissed off when you recruit the people out of their firm. It happens. I went through my QuickBooks last night and that company, that same company that sent us a cease and desist letter 2 years ago, was our second biggest client last year.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So from going from getting potentially sued by a company to them signing an engagement letter and wanting to work with us to building a successful relationship, that only came because of what they've seen from us online. So there's that as a third thing. Another thing is like I sit as the board chair for the YCLM, which is the Young Construction Leaders of Manitoba. So as a recruiter, I'm not an engineer or a superintendent or a carpenter, but I'm the chair of their board. And I think it's because they recognize we are actually subject matter experts in construction and they recognize that because we post about it and no one else does. So I've never seen that as a headhunter before where they're actually sitting as the chair of the board in that industry.
That is quite incredible. And so a couple of things you mentioned. One is clients saying to you, you guys are everywhere, right? That is music to your ears, isn't it? When you're running a small business, especially like our businesses are very small, right? We don't have tons of employees. And so the perception is, and it's because of the social media and the marketing and the content you're doing, the perception is you guys are everywhere. So you have this omnipresence, even though the reality is you're a really small business. But then also the opportunities and the doors that opens, like I'm guessing you would have never been invited to be the chair of this board if they hadn't already heard of you through the marketing that you're doing, right?
No, absolutely. That's 100% accurate. And you're right. Like we are a small business, you know, we're only five people here. But there's something to be said about when you go to an industry event and Cass comes with me, and she has, you know, a black magic video camera on a gimbal. It kind of catches the attention of people, right? They're like, oh, what's going on here? Absolutely. Like, even when we went to the Pinnacle Society, right, she was there videoing, and
yeah,
and people are just like, they're interested in being on video, or they're interested in what's going on, or after the event they're going to keep their eye online to see, is that video going to come online somewhere? And, you know, the highlight video, I want to watch it, right? Whether they like it, comment it, engage on it at all, you know, there's eyes on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so you doubled your business between 2022 when Cass came on and 2023. And you also have the qualitative, like people telling you at events, oh, I see your content, and, you know, you are getting inbound leads. But what's the, do you know what the split is at this point in terms of outbound, like jobs and new clients from outbound versus inbound?
Well, right now it's 100% inbound. I haven't made a single outbound cold call in over a year.
So what was the process for transitioning then? Because you don't want to turn off one tap until the other tap is flowing, right? Because otherwise your business, like, you have no pipeline.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, like, you need to be strategic about that for sure. But for us, it was simple. It just came to the point where we were just getting so much inbound business that we didn't need to cold call anymore. Like, we typically have anywhere between 20 to 30 searches going on at any given time.
Wow.
And we have a whiteboard wall in our office. It's painted white and we can write on it anytime. And that's constantly filled without us having to do cold calls. So, you know, it keeps us busy enough. But it did take, like, a lot of time to get there, Mark.
Yes.
I don't want your listeners to think like, oh, you hire a marketing person, right, and 30 days later, you're going to be getting all these inbound leads, because that's not how it works. And a lot of people are wired to think, you know, 30, 60, 90 day return. But this was something that happened over the course of 2 years,
yeah,
not 30 or 60, 90 days. Like, when I hired Cass, the idea was, okay, we'll give it a year and see how it does. Yeah. But you could also work a full year creating content and that content's not good and it gets you nowhere. So you need to be creating, like, well-curated quality content.
Yeah.
I do think it needs to be a variety of things. Like, when I think of content, Mark, I think of three pillars.
Okay.
I think of graphic design. Mm-hmm. I think of video, and I think of writing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think this is important for your listeners, because if people are interested in going out there and finding a good social media manager to add to their team, those are three pillars that they need to look at. And it's very, very difficult to find somebody that can hit all three pillars.
I was about to ask you exactly. So I love those pillars. To me, I care. I'm probably such a pain in the ass because I'm so fussy and pernickety about design. And I think it just makes such a huge difference when you've got a really high quality design, it really elevates your brand and everything you're doing. And if it looks like crap, then that reflects on your service as well. So design is really important. But writing as well is a skill that I think you can develop, but a lot of recruiters, it's not like, and I don't, well, yeah, writing in general, but especially marketing, social media, copywriting, that's a skilled, you know, thing, right? That a lot of recruiters don't have. So,
yeah, I agree. And I think that's the one thing that recruiters do need to get better at when they hire social media, is they need to take on the writing themselves, for a couple reasons. The first reason being, when you hire somebody in marketing, they're probably not going to have any experience at all in your industry, whether it's, you know, sales, HR, construction in my case.
Yeah.
So for example, when I hired Cass, she had no A, recruitment experience, but B, construction experience, right? So she was great at creating the graphics. I would do the writing and put the pen to paper, and we'd team up that way. Over time, she's learned the industry. And again, this is the whole thing about investing time into people is, you know, I invested time into her up front. And now it's at a point 2 years later, we can fast forward down the road where I barely have to spend any time at all, if any at all, with her, because she just understands it now. But you do have to give it that time. But anyway, going back to the writing, we work together on the writing. Cass is proficient in graphic design, and you're right, you need to be very picky with that stuff. We only use Adobe InDesign. We got rid of Canva because they just don't have as good a templates at all. And then, you know, if you can find somebody that's good at video and doing it in a, you know, in an efficient manner, getting the right shots, editing it properly, like, that's also like kind of its own skill set. So if you can find that unicorn that can do all three, great. But I think you really realistically want to look at two. And I would suggest video and graphics.
Awesome. So a couple of things. One is getting the right person, right? Someone who's really good. But B, as you said, like, we're not just talking about putting any content out there. It has to be the right content, good content. Otherwise, we're just wasting time and money here. So first question about Cass, like, how experienced was she when you hired her? Because sometimes owners ask me, hey, Mark, do we need like a marketing manager with 5 years experience? Or could we hire a marketing grad who's like fresh out of college? And like, what's your philosophy on that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I lucked out with Cass. Like when I met Cass during the interview, I explained to her what my mission was. And I think that's really important to do when you find the right person is you need to explain like, why are you hiring this position and what is their end goal? And they need to be able to like be a visionary. If you're in marketing, you have to be a visionary and see what you're trying to do. And she was. So right away, I knew I had, a tiger by the tail for sure. So that was great. But then down the road, Mark, we did hire a second person in marketing that was actually too junior. So at the time, I thought it was great. I thought it'd be good for Cass to be able to like bring this person up to speed. But she was just too junior. She had just graduated university, college, didn't know how to write. Even graduating university and you learn these Adobe courses in university, it's very different than actually applying them in a real world situation.
Yeah.
So we found that it was actually taking too much time away from the content we needed. So I guess my answer to that would be like, definitely not somebody fresh out of grad school, unless you want to give a lot more time to train them. Mm-hmm. But the truth is like recruiters aren't the ones that should be training marketing people. Like, I don't know about you, Mark, but personally, I don't know Adobe Premiere, Adobe InDesign, like well enough. Like Cass trained me on that. If anything, I should be able to train her in the industry itself.
I'm thinking more like social media, for example, you are probably going to know more about LinkedIn than like a marketing grad, right? And so you are training them on the platforms that matter to us, as well as the type of content that will resonate for your audience and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And you also don't want to spread yourself too thin.
Yeah.
Like we focus on LinkedIn and that's it. Okay. There is obviously Facebook, there's Instagram, there's Twitter, there's TikTok, whatever else. We don't focus on that at all because LinkedIn is business savvy people. They want education, they want inspiration, they want information. And those are the types of people we want to get in front of.
I think that's a good point. I've made that mistake is trying to do every channel and just spreading yourself too thin and diluting your resources. And it sounds like what you guys do is you just want to pick your best channel and really master that and put your whole weight behind that so that you can have a bigger impact, which kind of makes sense now. I feel dumb now looking back trying to do Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and everything else.
Well, we did those things early too, Mark. Like those are mistakes we made, and we found out pretty quickly that just the traction on LinkedIn was a lot better. That's all.
Yeah, makes sense. So, what is the strategy or the calendar look like as far as the frequency and the types of you've given a flavor of the type of content, but like what's the system as far as like on a weekly or monthly basis? How many pieces of content are you sharing on LinkedIn, and what's the mix?
Yeah, so we have a goal every week to put 4 posts out online. So every week, and then we like to mix it up. So we do graphics. We like to try to do one video, a graphic, and then a written piece as well. Try and mix it up so there's something different each day. And those graphics can be 1-page graphics. They can be 3-page carousels. Videos are typically something that either I try to stay away from like me talking and giving recruitment advice. And it's more about like highlighting our clients and highlighting industry events and kind of propping up the industry that we're in. Because that's what we find drives the most inbound leads to us anyway, is when people see that we're demonstrating our industry expertise, which is more about construction recruitment, not just generalized recruitment. So we actually use Loomly. We used to use Monday.com, but we now switched over to Loomly about a year ago. And we've got a content calendar that's typically built out for about a month. But of course, we leave wiggle room each week in case like a current event or something pops up that we need to be on top of within 24 hours.
Love that.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. So you've got your content calendar planned a month ahead, and it's typically 4 posts per week. And you've described the variety. So, and it's also interesting that a lot of your videos aren't you talking, that it's you, it's about your clients or about your industry. So that is awesome. Anything else that you think people really need to know or understand about video and social media content?
I think, a lot of people might look at this and think that it's just not, it's not doable. Like they don't have the capital runway to do it. But I think what I would say is it doesn't have to be an extremely high budget effort. Like you can do this with a low budget effort. You can hire a new grad out of college and you don't have to pivot to video right away. In fact, I would probably encourage people to not pivot to video right away and probably to just start doing writing and graphics and posting that online. Because as you put pen to paper and write about your industry, A, you're learning more about your industry, but you're learning how to communicate better when you write, believe it or not. So if you can get the writing down and the graphics down, it's going to help you when you do pivot to video to be able to communicate that a lot better. One thing that I noticed when people do video is there's a lot of people that aren't good at it and they need a lot of coaching. And it's because they haven't done the prerequisite to video, which is actually communicating in written form.
I would argue, Justice, that putting content out there on LinkedIn is mandatory. Like you, if you want to build a recruiting business and build a brand, like what you just described is the minimum. Like that's the cost of entry, right? Is writing and images and graphics. I think where you have though distinguished yourself is really pushing beyond that, because even getting people to do that, okay, that's the first hurdle. In our coaching program, we get people like day one, this is what we're doing, right? We're going to be posting on content on LinkedIn, and if you're already posting, then it's leveling up, what you're doing, the frequency or the quality or ideally both. But where you've excelled and created something that's a true differentiator in your market is with video and telling your clients' stories with video as a medium. And I think that is what's like really elevated you above your competition. I'd like to shift.
Absolutely.
Sorry, go ahead.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the only way we got there was by starting with the other pieces first.
Okay.
Like I think the biggest barrier to people posting online, Mark, and maybe you disagree with this. I mean, you're the one who coaches your clients on it, but it's like a psychological barrier.
Yes.
People just don't have the courage to do it. Like everybody is, for the most part, an expert in what they do.
Absolutely.
But it takes a lot of courage and a lot of just time to sit down and think about what to put out there.
Yeah.
But once they do that once, and if they can do it consistently, they'll get good at it. It's just like anything else. You have to be bad at something before you get good. You have to be the fool before you become the master.
It's funny because Sanjay and I actually did a podcast episode specifically about this, and it is like imposter syndrome. Like I don't, why would anyone want to listen to me? Or I don't know what I would say that would capture. But you've just hit it on the head. It's having the courage to put yourself out there, but it doesn't take any more courage than cold calling, right? That requires courage as well. So if you can cold call, you can post on LinkedIn for sure. I'd love to talk more about building a brand though. Is there anything else apart from what we've already discussed that you think, well, first of all, why is creating a strong brand crucial in today's recruitment market? Because it does sound like a lot of work. And that's the other objection. But the 3 main objections, one, as you mentioned, is mindset and it's like psychological.
Mm-hmm.
2 is it seems like too much work and I'm already working 60 hours a week, so I don't have time for this. Or 3, they're not convinced there's going to be an ROI. But you've obviously just proven that. But why do you think anyone who's serious about building a business needs to focus on building a strong brand?
Well, I think the industry is evolving a lot. And I think down the road, the recruiters that have a brand are going to replace all the recruiters that don't, in my opinion. If there's a small company out there that has really good branding, they're always going to beat a bigger company that has inferior branding. So branding is one of the most important things you can do for yourself and your recruitment business. And there's no question about it. And I think anybody that thinks otherwise is, you know, sadly mistaken. Now,
can,
I think
can I just interject there for a sec, Justice? I agree 100%. And the reason is, like, the industry is on the precipice of a massive transformation, right? The recruiting industry is changing faster than I think a lot of people realize. And AI is going to replace a lot, not recruiters, you know, not all recruiters, but it's going to replace some recruiters and certainly replace some aspects of what clients use recruiters for. And so, but the ones who are the most prominent and respected in their niche market, you know, that's like a moat around your business that protects you against, you know, changes in the marketplace. So for example, I suspect, I've not tested this, but if I ask ChatGPT, find me a construction, you know, an engineering recruiter in Winnipeg, I suspect that the Peterson group of companies is gonna come up, right? So because you've got a footprint, you've got a digital footprint with lots of roads pointing back to you. So whereas if companies don't have that, you know, people aren't going to search Google and scroll through lots of pages to find you. They're just going to ask, you know, they're going to ask, you know, they're going to ask Siri, they're going to ask ChatGPT, they're going to ask Alexa, find me a construction recruiter, and the Peterson group is going to come up.
Yeah, absolutely. It keeps us top of mind. It keeps us at the high levels of SEO. And then some of the byproducts and results of this are, you know, we switched our business from fully contingent to, I'd say, 80% retained.
Yes.
And simply because of branding, Mark. Like, that's literally what it is. It's branding and trust. And those two words run hand in hand, right? And then also with retained, what, going from contingent to retained, going from X percent to a higher percentage, increasing our fees. All of this is possible because of the digital transformation building trust in our brand.
Tell me about that transition then. So, like, was that gradual? Was it all at once? When did you realize, hey, the contingent business model, like, we want to get paid up front? And then how long did it take you to get to that point where there's like 80% of your searches are retained?
Yeah, it kind of ran parallel with our digital transformation. So when we first started our business, we were 100% contingent, and we needed to do that because contingent is usually pretty quick in terms of like energy expended versus money in, right? There are definitely a lot of searches that you take on the risk and you don't make any money on. But when you're first starting a business, I think, and even when you first get into recruitment, like, you need to do it contingently, and there's always going to be room for contingent recruiters in the world. But we just noticed, like, as our business grew, as we started getting a lot more inbound leads, it was honestly a lot to do with demand. When our services were in high demand, we started demanding retainers because we needed to know who to prioritize, right?
Absolutely.
And the people that were willing to give us retainers, we knew were serious clients that wanted to partner with us. And those are the clients you want long term. You want clients that are going to come back for repeat business, that are going to co-brand themselves with you. So it's not just, hey, we're looking for a construction superintendent. It's the Peterson Group and this engineering company together are looking for this, right? I think it just shows a lot more commitment in the partnership between you and the client.
I love this. And it's so true. It seems on the surface, two different problems. You've got the problem of having predictable pipeline and consistent flow of, you know, clients and business coming in. And then you've got the problem of, how do I, you know, I'm tired of, you know, filling only one in four orders because the clients move the goalposts. I want to move to retained. But these two problems actually are related, right? Because you need to have demand in order to have walkaway power, which means you've got the confidence to request and require a retainer. And then that's one of the filters that allows you to know which of these jobs should we work on and which are we going to put to the side and only throw a resume over if it crosses our desk, kind of thing. So were there any other, so one of the keys, it sounds like, was it went in parallel with you building your brand, focusing on digital marketing, were there any other key shifts that you had to put in place in order to start winning that sort of business?
No, it ran parallel with our digital transformation, the demand for our services, the branding that we had behind us. I think that only like experienced, mature recruiters can do retained searches, though, because you need to have spent time in the industry. You really need to know the industry like the back of your hand. And you need to be able to back up the fact that you're guaranteeing you're going to fill this position, right? Like when you take on a retainer, the pressure's on.
Yes.
It's not like, oh, I didn't fill this role in a week or two, I can just move on to another client. Like that's not how that works. So you need to be able to guarantee you're going to fill the position, but then you got to back it up. But the nice thing about that is clients trust you. And if you fill a retained position, a client's not going to go to another recruiter ever. Like, why would they? Right? You just earn their trust. And then the nice thing for the recruiter is it's forecastable income. So I think it's a win-win if you can eventually down the road move your business from contingent to retained.
Forecastable revenue, I think that is the key word, 100%. So you've since, now you're at 1.8 million. Were there any other, like, is that just part of the same trajectory that you initiated in 2023 when you and your wife hired, or 2022, sorry, you and your wife hired Cass? You spent 2 years developing this machine, which is now made you the premier construction engineering recruiter. Were there any other factors that have contributed to reaching that next level?
Yeah. And this is one that's kind of hard to quantify, Mark, but when we started doing the digital transformation, the when we really saw this take off is when we started to just prop up our industry and add value to it. We weren't doing it with the intention of actually getting job orders. Like, we weren't doing it with a call to action every post saying, hey, if you need a construction superintendent, call the Peterson Group. Like, I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with that, but we didn't market ourselves with like that sense of desperation, like we need business. It was more about, this is what the industry is doing. This is how the industry can get better. And, you know, I think people saw that along the way. And there was a lot of humility to it. It wasn't asking for business. And I think that's kind of like the reason we get a lot of business is because we don't ask for it. As ironic as that sounds, but we're just doing a lot of work to make the industry more well-known and take a negative stigma out of it, as construction's always had that stigma. So, you know, moving forward down the road, we have plans. We're actually in the second interview process to add another kind of like creative director or marketing person to our team. And we have plans to start a podcast. Maybe like this sounds a little crazy, but ideas are always crazy until they happen. We want to go across Canada to other cities and highlight projects and people in other cities and kind of make like a, I would say like a, you know, 5-minute episode, like documentary in each city of a flagship project, you know, with no intention of these things bringing us searches. But, you know, people are going to see this in the industry and come to us when they do have a need.
That is awesome. I love that. Listen, just as one more thing I wanted to ask you while we're together, because the name of the show is The Resilient Recruiter, I'd love to hear your journey, because I follow you on LinkedIn and I've seen you post about your health journey. Can you talk about the impact? Like, first of all, what triggered that and how that personal transformation has had a profound impact on other parts of your life and your business?
Yeah, happy to talk about it. I'm pretty open about these things. So I quit. I'm approaching about 980 days or so sober. And to be honest, there wasn't like necessarily one specific event actually that made this happen. It was kind of years of building up to it. And I think that's a common fallacy, Mark, of like addiction is you hit this rock bottom and your life changes. Well, that's not actually what happens. Like typically, addicts have many, many bottoms, right? So throughout my life, I made many mistakes. I got kicked off one of my varsity sports teams for performance and drinking. I've been to jail before. I've stolen a car. I've made a lot of mistakes, and the common denominator to all of them were my drinking. And so, I about 900 days or so ago, I decided I'm done. No more alcohol, no more booze, no more weed, no substances at all, nothing that can alter my mind. And I decided that I'm going to go to meetings and get myself better. And so, you know, that's really changed my life. Just having a clear head, never worrying about alcohol anymore, you know, where I'm going to take this client, what I'm going to drink with this person. It's really kind of the foundation to my life now is my sobriety. And I think a lot of people actually appreciate that because they know I'm always honest with them now. A lot of clients and friends and family members, it's actually deepened relationships. And at the beginning of it, I thought I'm never going to have another friend again. I'm never going to be able to wine and dine a client again. Right. But these are all things that I think were actually just mistakes in my mind. So with that, obviously my business has grown a lot in the last 2.5 years. Like I would have never been able to accomplish what I've accomplished in my business while I was drinking. I was very functional, Mark. Like I would still be in the office at 6 a.m., very hungover, but still here, still working, then going out at night. So I would put the fun in functional, but it was ruining my life at home and realistically kind of just like deteriorating on the inside. What it was for me was I was very, like if you saw me from the outside looking in, you'd say, hey, this guy has a house. This guy has a wife. This guy has two kids. He's got a good job. Like he's got a great life. But on the inside, I was probably like the least happiest I'd ever been in my life. And that's when I realized like there's something a lot more profound that's like broken within me. So it wasn't necessarily drinking. Like that's definitely a problem. But my real issues were like very low self-worth, depression, insecurity issues, imposter syndrome, things like that. So once I learned how to deal with those problems, like going to meetings, talking to a therapist, I realized that alcohol was actually just the remedy. It's like, that's what I would drink to numb the pain and to make me feel better about myself. So once I started taking care of myself and making myself more confident, myself feel better, I didn't need to rely on the drinking anymore. And it's genuinely turned my life around. I've got deeper relationships with all my clients. I'm able to lead a team and grow a business. I go to the gym every single day. I'm clear in my head every day. I'm not, you know, operating with like this fogginess in my mind. It's totally turned my life around. And I put it all in my sobriety. It's been an amazing transformation. Thanks for asking.
Just as that is such a powerful story and hugely inspirational. So thank you so much for sharing it so openly with our listeners.
I appreciate you asking me about it. And I'm, you know, I actually sponsor people in the local construction industry in the community now that I've got sobriety under my belt. So I'm a pretty open book about it. You know, I made a post about my sobriety and I got more inbound DMs from that message than I've ever had from any other thing. People asking me to help them out. And I didn't realize how many people that actually do suffer in silence and don't have the courage to reach out and talk to somebody. So, you know, always happy to talk with them, Mark. And thanks for bringing it up.
Wow, that is awesome, man. And look, I couldn't be happier for you. You are, you know, what you're doing at Peterson Group is really inspiring. And I loved getting to hear the whole story behind it, as well as some really tactical and strategic insights that people can apply to improve their own business. So, and I believe you're expecting child number 3 in March.
Yeah, that's right. In a few weeks from now.
Awesome.
Yep, baby number 3. We've got 2 boys already, and this one's a girl. So it kind of completes the family.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got the opposite. My eldest is a girl, and then I've got 2 boys. But one thing, I'm sure you've thought about this, but until we had 3 kids, we didn't realize how much of a challenge that was. Is now you're outnumbered. I don't know if you, there's right. actually a British comedy sitcom called Outnumbered. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it just highlights the craziness of having more than 2 kids because, like, literally, you and your wife can both be kind of one-on-one with somebody, but there's another one floating around somewhere doing goodness knows what. So, no, I'm just joking. It's awesome, man. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I've heard that saying that going from two to three, you have to switch from a man-to-man defense to a zone defense.
You got it. So, exactly. Yeah. 100%. All right, Justice. Well, look, I will look forward to speaking again and seeing you at a Pinnacle conference in the near future.
Sounds great, Mark. Thanks again for having me on. Take care. Right.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Resilient Recruiter. I know how busy recruiters are, so I'm honored that you're investing this time with me each week. I don't take your attention for granted. That's why I'm going all out to deliver value for you here, real insights you can apply to improve your business. And if you really want to help me to reach a wider audience and impact more people, please consider leaving the show a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you leave me a review, please reach out and let me know so I can thank you personally. Please hit the subscribe button and I'll see you next time.